walking on UC's campus in Berkeley this morning may have wondered what a small group was doing sleeping on the ground.
They were sleeping. They were just semi-conscious. it was sort of that dream. We can't sleep on campus, and we know that, and we're trying. It's kind of hard to stay awake the whole time, but we're going to anyway.
As Paige Wolverton of ROAR, or Retain Our Reproductive Rights, she said her group is holding a nonstop vigil through April. That's when the U.S. Supreme Court will hear another abortion case, the first since the historic Roe v. Wade decision legalizing abortion. ROAR wants to see that decision upheld, and Wolverton said the vigil has 400 or 600 participants.
But we need to have a lot of people out at night because it's dangerous, especially for our women, to be out there without... without a large group.
Wolverton said the vigil was kicked off with a rally last night. She said ROAR held a sarcastic service.
We built a huge altar for... It was a big altar that said every sperm is sacred, and at the top we had a big sperm. We all bowed down and worshipped it. And
Wolverton said the vigil started last night in honor of International Women's Day. ROAR plans to be on the plaza for quite a while.
Education is a right. That is the slogan of Spring Action 89, a minority group planning a protest march and rally on the steps of the Capitol in Sacramento. KALX reporter Dan Cerulli has the story.
On April 10th, over 10,000 protesters are planning to march on Sacramento to demand a better education for minorities in California. Spring Action has become an annual event that gives minorities a chance to speak out about state public schooling. This year, Spring Action is calling for a broad reform of the entire California educational system. Asian Business League member and Spring Action supporter Robert Liu says that California schools are among the worst in the nation and need to be improved.
The state of California ranks 49th out of 50 states in terms of education that it provides its citizens. And we're, you know, California is at the forefront of almost everything. So we feel that there's something wrong there.
In addition to reforms on grammar and high schools, Spring Action is targeting the treatment of minorities in college. The list of demands includes an ethnic studies requirement and increased financial aid. However, Liu says that even if the state legislature does approve the demands, this may not directly affect the university.
The UC systems are run out of a regent system so that it doesn't fall under the jurisdiction of what the legislator puts out. What the legislator can do is withhold funding if they don't do what, you know, basically if the UC does not do what they want.
Preparation for Spring Action will continue for the next month, and the group is confident that they will have enough support to make an effect in the state capitol. The ASUC Senate has passed a bill to lobby for Spring Action, and the group will continue to publicize on campus. For KALX News, this is Dan Cerulli.
Well, the fate of People's Park is still being debated, but for once, city and UC officials may have found room for agreement. The Berkeley City Council wants to clean up the park, and they've asked for UC help. An interim improvement plan will be voted on by the city next week. If approved, Mayor Lonnie Hancock will be authorized to take steps to clean up the park. City officials want to keep the park safe from UC's developers. They hope the cleanup will help change UC's mind about building student housing on the site. Dorothy Walker, UC's Associate Director of Campus Planning, says she is very interested in the city's plan.
The Campus Planning Office paints a perfect picture of the long-range development program. However, student representatives say it's a farce. Christian Lombardi has more on the story.
Campus Planning Officer David Stoloff presented the long-range development plan to ASUC senators last night. Stoloff says the LRDP is a catch-up plan to meet the changing needs of Berkeley's diverse student body. It addresses academic, social, and student needs. However, ASUC senators are particularly interested in the LRDP's proposal on housing. The LRDP suggests the building of a small residence hall on People's Park. Stoloff says People's Park is the best location for a housing project. It's close to campus, it's university property, and most Berkeley students reside in the south side. Also, to bring the community together, a recreational area will remain on site.
The idea is when we're adding quite a few students to living in the south side, to the 8,500 who are already living in the south side, we need to create a neighborhood that is a good place to live. And if we don't address the problems of People's Park, then we can't address the neighborhood, and to put more students in a neighborhood that's undesirable to live is not very responsible.
ASUC senators fear this proposal will cause upheaval within the student body. Many students remember the People's Park protests of the late 60s and feel the need to preserve what their predecessors fought for. Student Representative Rodney Ward opposes the housing proposal of the LRDP.
I think the university is taking a very confrontational stance to build on People's Park. They don't have to build housing there. They could build housing in other places.
The Senate is considering a bill that will allow the student body to vote on the issue in the spring election. Kristen Lombardi, KALX News.
A pesticide found on apples has caused public school systems nationwide to change their ways, but not so in the East Bay. KALX reporter Jenny Lind has more.
Although New York City schools have stopped selling apples suspected of pesticide in their cafeterias, the Berkeley School District isn't planning to follow suit. Berkeley School District Director of Food Services Sharon Baker says she will take temporary precautions until more is known about ALAR, the pesticide in question.
What we're presently going to do is we don't even have a fresh apple on our school lunch menu this month. We're just not going to purchase any apples. We have other
Baker
fresh
says the
that
Berkeley
we'll
schools aren't faced. Baker says the Berkeley schools aren't faced with the same problem as schools in New York because ALAR is illegal in California.
Any apples that we would purchase for the schools would be purchased in-state from an in-state grower anyway. So we don't have to really concern ourselves about fresh apples, provided they were coming from a California grower.
New York schools stopped selling apples in response to a controversial report issued last week by the Natural Resources and Defense Council. The report charged pesticide residue on produce threatens the health of American children, but apple producers say less than 4% of apples sold in the United States show any trace of ALAR. Baker says she will wait for the USDA to investigate the issue before making any decisions.
So we will take the proper precautions and just hold and wait until we have definitive information from the state and USDA.
Oakland School District's Director of Food Services, Francis McGlone, says the school's apple producers have assured her that none of their apples contain ALAR. Jenny Lind, KALX News.
Thanks, Jenny. In a recent audit of the city of Oakland's phoning behavior, the city auditor discovered an overwhelming amount of calls made to 976 numbers, many of which were sexually explicit.
Here at my house, there are so many trees throughout the garden. Why don't you come take a walk with me? I have a wonderful idea.
Here to file the report is KALX reporter Lucy Valadares.
In the last 10 months, an amount of $2,000 was paid out for calls made to 976 numbers. According to City Auditor Norma Lau, hundreds of calls were made during the months of July 1987 to April 1988. The calls were made from the City Attorney's Office, Police Department, Oakland Museum, and other municipal agencies. In addition to the 976 numbers, municipal workers have been making personal calls that have exceeded 30 minutes. The finding also uncovered a series of calls made for operator assistance, which Lau says could have been looked up in a phone book. Lau says that her recommendations for the problem is based on common sense.
There are various recommendations to strengthen the controls in the use of telephones in the city. And the first recommendation was that the city departments should retain their phone bills for at least 2 fiscal years, because some of the departments had thrown some of their bills away so that we didn't have the chance to look at them.
Other recommendations include maintaining a log of all calls to exceed 30 minutes, not accepting collect calls, avoiding calls for operator assistance, and most importantly, forbidding all 976 numbered calls. Lau says her office will evaluate the phone situation in 90 more days. For KALX, Lucy Valadares.
In Sacramento today, the state Senate approved a bill to ban assault rifles. Governor Duke Majan said he will sign an explicit bill, but this one first must pass the state assembly next week. Locally, the movement to ban assault-type weapons is gaining support. Alameda County Supervisor Don Parada has formed the Citizens Coalition to outlaw assault weapons. His group pledges to support legislators whose careers have been threatened by the so-called gun lobby. In Sacramento, Senate President-elect Pro Tem David Roberti is pushing for his gun control bill.
Frankly, the issue isn't whether or not this bill is going to pass. One day it will be the law of the state of California, if not in this form, in another form.
Pleasanton Police Chief Bill Eastman is president of the California Police Chief Association. He says the chiefs are not seeking a wholesale ban on all guns, just certain semi-automatic weapons. He says his department has had to deal with semi-automatic weapons in the hands of criminals.
Everybody in the state has come across them, primarily in narcotics enforcement cases, and in the last 12 months, we've picked up 20 such semi-automatic rifles, including AK-47s and Uzis.
Senator Diane Watson is vocal in her support for the new gun control legislation and issued a warning.
The violent street gangs have been branching out, and if they're not in your district today, they will be, because they're taking advantage of the lucrative rock cocaine market. Those gangs are rolling. They're rolling up and down the state. They're rolling across this country. It's just a matter of time.
And Senator Art Torres tells of physical threats to his colleagues.
Three of our members have been threatened because of the potential vote on this issue. Three members, two of which support this measure, one of whom opposes this measure, have been threatened by, quote, law-abiding citizens.
In Alameda Court, Supervisor Parada's group hopes to attract 10,000 people willing to pledge time and money to support politicians who support gun control.
Some members of Alameda City Council are cheering over Tuesday's election. Incumbent Anthony Arnovich and newcomer Bill Withrow were elected to the council. Council member Joe Kamisha, who was not on the ballot, said this election will bring some much-needed balance to the council.
Christmas in March for me. We finally got a shot now at reversing a lot of the nonsense that's happened the last couple of years and moving forward. So I'm very excited.
In the past, he said, it was hard to accomplish anything on the board.
Had a three-person majority that was tied to Mayor Karika that did pretty much everything he and the vice mayor wanted. And it really shut a lot of people out of the process. So this is much...
Withrow beat incumbent Haiti Monsef, a close ally of Mayor Chuck Corica. Withrow is a former Navy captain and has an MBA from Harvard.
Bail review was set for March 14th for the half-brother of Patrick Purdy, the man who killed five children on a Stockton schoolyard and wounded 30 other people with an assault rifle. 20-year-old Albert Goulart Jr. of Modesto has pleaded innocent to a felony count of possessing an explosive device in a public place and misdemeanor counts of possessing illegal fireworks and dangerous fireworks. The preliminary hearing was scheduled for March 22nd, and bail was set at $500,000.
It's final and it's official. John Tower has been denied the job of defense secretary. Stay tuned.
This is Edwin Meese. You're listening to the news on KALX, broadcasting from the University of California. It's a crime if you don't stay tuned.
The Senate has rejected the nomination of John Tower as defense secretary, handing President Bush a major defeat in his first high-stakes showdown with the Democratic-controlled Congress. The vote was 53-47. The White House says Bush will act swiftly to submit a replacement nomination to the Senate. Tower's nomination was scuttled by concerns about his drinking habits and his close relations with Pentagon contractors. After the vote, Tower said no cabinet nominee has ever been subjected to such intensive and demeaning public scrutiny. Yet, he says, no evidence was uncovered that he had ever breached legal or ethical standards or been derelict in his duty. Tower also thanked President Bush and some members of the Senate.
I am deeply grateful to our great president for his continuing confidence in me and his unflagging support in the most difficult of circumstances. I'm obliged to my old colleagues in the Senate who rallied to me with fervor, zeal, and eloquence in the face of staggering political odds. I shall always be in their debt.
The vote culminates a tumultuous six-day Senate debate. In a final defiant speech, Republican leader Bob Dole told his colleagues we ought to hang our heads. Dole wished Tower good luck.
John Tower will be gone. We'll be here. And I would hope that whatever John Tower does, I wish him the best. I'm certain we all do, in one way or another.
Senate Armed Service Committee Chairman Sam Nunn summed up for the opposition.
Power falls short of the standards, the high standards, which must be demanded of those who would bear the awesome responsibilities of Secretary of Defense.
The rejection of Tower marks only the ninth time in history that the Senate has turned down a president's cabinet nominee. It's the first such decision since 1959, when the Senate voted against conferring President Eisenhower's nominee for Secretary of Commerce, Louis Strauss.
Also in the Capitol, talks are scheduled today between Congress and the White House on the budget for the coming fiscal year. White House Press Secretary Marlon Fitzwater says the session is to build on a groundwork laid in informal talks between both sides. He says the negotiations will usher in a little more give and take, and House Budget Chairman Leon Panetta of California says goodwill on both sides could help solve budget problems.
President Bush is kicking off what the White House has billed as Drug Week by paying tribute to Drug Enforcement Administration agents killed in the line of duty. In a speech at the DEA's New York office, Bush served notice to cop-killing drug traffickers that hunting season is over.
Killing must stop, and we must repeat it until we're hoarse, repeat it until we're heard, from the Apollo Theater to the halls of Congress to anyone who doesn't seem to understand what it is you are up against out there on the street. The killing must stop.
He added he's ready to attack the nation's drug problem on both the supply and demand fronts.
Oliver North's lawyers tried today to discredit prosecution witness Carl Chanel, who's already pleaded guilty to contra-related charges. North's lawyer asked why. Prior to the trial, Chanel hadn't mentioned claims that he overheard North say he didn't care about going to jail or lying to Congress. One of the charges against North is that, while a White House aide, he lied to Congress about his efforts to assist the Nicaraguan Contra rebels.
Eastern Airlines, which has billed itself as the Wings of Man, today announced it's landed in bankruptcy court. Since Saturday, the airline has been virtually shut down by a machinist strike. It's been almost without pilots because the pilots union is honoring the machinist's picket lines. The strike has cost the airline up to $7 million a day. But even before the strike, it had been hemorrhaging millions of dollars. Today, the company said it can't go on that way and filed for U.S. protection from creditors under Chapter 11 in U.S. Bankruptcy Court in New York. Jack Davis of the Eastern Pilots Association says filing bankruptcy may not be so bad for the company.
The good thing about the bankruptcy process is that this victim of Eastern Airlines is now on the operating table, and that means that a lot of reconstructive surgery can get done, not just to labor, but also to the bondholders, the people who own the debt instruments, to the banks, to everybody else. This process now clearly falls under the aegis of a court and not just Mr. Lorenzo.
But Charles Bryan of the Machinist Union was angry about the move.
They wanted a strike. Make no mistake, this is their strike. This is Frank Lorenzo's conspiracy to bankrupt Eastern Airlines, and he's got what he wants.
Eastern President Phil Baik says the cash crisis can only be inverted in the bankruptcy court.
Well, the airlines seem to be flying into bad weather, but here to tell us what's in store for the Bay Area is KALX meteorologist Mike Pechner.
Well, Pete Nimrod, we've got some showers around the Bay Area right now. They're scattered hither and yon. They haven't amounted to a lot. Most of the rain has been heaviest to the east over the hills from Moraga into Old Pleasant Hill, Walnut Creek, Concord, Martinez, Benicia, and places there. But we've had some showers around Oakland and Berkeley in the last couple hours. Hasn't amounted to much, though. I mean, we've had several hundredths of an inch. And still a few scattered showers tonight. Lows, upper 40s and lower 50s on campus. Cooler tomorrow. Highs, 50s and lower 60s. We've had gusty, southerly winds up in the East Bay Hills, but those will be decreasing. And then tomorrow, partly cloudy after a few showers. And then I think the outlook for the weekend, just cooler. And the outside threat of a shower, but I think for the most part, it'll be partly to mostly sunny. That's evening weather. I'm meteorologist Mike Pechner for KALX.
Thank you very much, Mike.
The 59-year-old United Airlines pilot who landed a Boeing 747 after its cargo door ripped off in flight says a federal rule that makes commercial pilots retire age 60 is outdated. Captain David Cronin, who lives at Lake Tahoe, says he'll miss flying big jets. Cronin turned 60 on March 23rd. He says he would certainly love to keep flying, but in his words, quote, unfortunately, they can't put new rivets in me, unquote. Cronin retired today after 35 years with United.
A major underground nuclear weapons test rocked the Nevada desert at dawn today, unleashing a shock that measured 5.1 on the Richter scale. Motion from the blast was recorded by monitors atop some high-rise hotel casinos in Las Vegas, 85 miles from ground zero. 35 protesters turned out at the main entrance to the sprawling desert site, and 15 arrests were reported for trespassing, according to Energy Department spokesman Jim Boyer.
Representatives of NATO and the Warsaw Pact began talks today on reducing conventional forces. The Soviet bloc proposed sweeping cuts with eventual goal of making both alliances strictly defensive by the year 2000. NATO also supports sweeping cuts, saying it's outnumbered 2-1. However, the West proposes to upgrade 700 Lance nuclear missiles, doubling their range to about 150 miles. The Soviet ambassador to the talks says that could impede progress.
And a report from Tibet says Chinese forces are staging a tough response to the anti-Chinese rioting that has swept Lhasa. One Tibetan woman reached by telephone from Beijing says Chinese troops are rounding up Tibetans. She also said all foreigners have been removed from the city. One group of foreigners accuses Chinese authorities of atrocities in the attempt to put down pro-independence rioting. The government, which has imposed martial law, denies violating human rights.
Tonight in sports, we'll have a weather update for Southern California. Find out why David Cohen is playing meteorologist next in sports.
Scoop Nisker, guest co-anchor, saying if you don't like the news on CalX, you have no other choice but to go out and make some of your own.
Welcome to the Thursday Evening Sports Report. I'm David Cohen, and on this rainy Thursday, a few Cal teams are down in Southern California, where today's temperature was in the low 70s under partly cloudy skies. The men's swimming team is in Long Beach for the Pac-10 Championships, which began with preliminary heats this morning. The Bears are currently ranked second in the nation, with seven straight dual meet victories and an overall record of 11-1. And just northeast of Long Beach at the Forum in Inglewood, the Pac-10 basketball tournament begins tonight with two first-round games. Cal has a first-round bye and will play against Oregon State tomorrow at 1 p.m. Here with a look at tomorrow afternoon's matchup, is CalX reporter Dave Miller.
Thanks a lot, Dave. Well, the Great Western Forum in Inglewood, home of the NBA's L.A. Lakers, will now be the home of Pac-10 basketball. At least until this Sunday, the conference's 10 teams have gathered to participate in the aptly named Pac-10 tournament. Action gets underway tonight when 8th-seeded Washington State faces number 9 Oregon and ASU meets 10th-seeded USC. Ah, yes, but what about Cal? Well, the 5th-seeded Bears are pitted against the OSU Beavers, who are seeded 4th in the tournament. Cal enters the tourney with an overall record of 19-11, and unless the Bears can pull off some big upsets, they are most likely headed for the NIT. The Beavers, well, they're 21-6, including two regular season victories over the Bears. Despite OSU's 21 wins, head coach Ralph Miller hasn't made reservations for the NCAA tournament just yet.
Well, I'm sure that Pac-10 will get 4 invites. Right now, we are in good shape. Now, I think you should always try to finish up the season correctly, and for us to assure ourselves of getting that 4th invite, I think we definitely have to beat Cal.
Well, tomorrow's matchup between Cal and OSU will be the 3rd meeting between the schools. Cal, of course, lost the 2 prior games, but Coach Miller isn't placing much importance on those 2 games.
We beat them twice, but we didn't run over them. And so this is why you always are concerned about playing a team like Cal for the 3rd time during the year. They have a lot to gain yet by a victory over us. I know they're going to come out 100% after that game, and we're just going to have to be able to, you know, withstand their charge, try to keep Taylor within control.
Well, for good news for Cal fans, though, we'll have Matt Beasert in uniform for the game against Oregon State. For Ralph Miller, he'll be trying to make it a storybook ending to his illustrious 38-year coaching career. Miller will be retiring at the end of this season. He will leave the collegiate ranks as the 6th winningest coach in NCAA history. Tomorrow's game between Cal and Oregon State tips off at 1 p.m. at the Forum. It can be seen on ESPN beginning at 1 o'clock. For Cal-X Sports, I'm Dave Miller.
All right, thanks, Dave. And the third Cal team playing in L.A. tomorrow is the women's softball team, which plays a doubleheader at UCLA. The 11-4 Bears have a 2-0 record in the pack, but they'll have a tough time maintaining their perfect conference mark. The Bruins, ranked number one in the country and defending the national crown, have a 10-1 record. And despite that single loss, UCLA has a team ERA of 0.00. Cal has been getting some strong pitching of its own, especially from freshman Robin Burgess. She's 6-0 with an ERA of, yes, 0.00. Head coach Diane Neinmeyer is not at all surprised by Burgess's first-year accomplishments.
She's probably one of the more underrated pitchers in Division I league right now, but I knew when I was recruiting Robin that she was going to be a good pitcher, and she certainly has showed us that.
Senior pitcher Aaron Cassidy, who will pitch the first game, has some impressive stats as well, including 5 shutouts and 7 tries, a 0.28 ERA, and 44 strikeouts, 5 walks in 50 innings. The Cal baseball team doesn't have a team ERA of 0, but pitching may be the key as the Bears battle ASU this weekend. Cal-X reporter Gary Hornbeek has the preview.
This weekend at Evans Diamond, the California Golden Bear baseball team hosts Arizona State in a big 3-game series. Both teams are among the nation's best, and their records are very similar. Cal has 18 wins and only 3 losses, and they're ranked 4th in the Baseball America poll and 9th in the ESPN rankings. ASU, on the other hand, is ranked 4th and 9th, but in the opposite polls. The Sun Devils have a 17-5 record, including 6 wins and no losses in the six-pack, and currently they are in first place. Despite Arizona State's strong early season showing, however, Cal manager Bob Milano is more worried about a different kind of element.
The thing this weekend that bothers me more than ASU is the weather. Are we going to be able to play? According to PAC rules, if we get rained out this entire series, we have to play 2 at ASU. So that'd make a 5-game series, and the 6th game would only be played here at Cal if it would had a bearing on first place, second place, third place in the conference. If it was a clear-cut thing, we'd never play it, and that's what bothers me. And
if the games are indeed played, Cal will have to continue to do what it has done lately. The pitching staff has led the Bears, and this weekend they will have to contend with a tough lineup. Dan Rumsey, Kevin Higgins, and freshman Mike Kelly lead the Sun Devils' power attack, and first baseman Steve Martin adds base hits with a .358 batting average. On the other side of the coin, Arizona State also has a solid pitching staff. Back from last year is star Rusty Kilga, who had 12 victories last season, and this year he currently owns a string of 4 consecutive complete games. All in all, ASU is a very strong team, and they're on a hot streak now, having swept Stanford last weekend at Palo Alto. So if you want to see some good baseball this weekend, hope for Sun and head out to Evans Diamond. All 3 games will be broadcast live here on KLX Berkeley, so tune in. For Cal-X Sports, I'm Gary Hornbeek.
All right, thanks, Gary. And turning to the NBA, the Warriors are hosting the Cavaliers tonight at 7:30 in the Coliseum Arena. The Warriors have won 13 of their last 14 at home, but the Cavaliers are coming to town with the NBA's best record overall and the best road record. We have 1 partial score in from the NBA tonight. The Kings are trailing the 76ers by 10 at the Spectrum in Philadelphia, 54-44 at the half. In exhibition baseball today, Dave Parker and Mark McGwire hit back-to-back homers in a 6th-run fifth inning as the Oakland A's had a 9-3 victory over the California Angels in a split-squad exhibition game. The A's are now 4-4. Mike Moore started and worked the first 4 innings for the A's, and Greg Catterae had the win, retiring 9 of the 10 Angels he faced, Bill Bolley, through the final 2 innings for Oakland. Be sure to follow the A's in the preseason as Cal-X brings you 3 noontime games Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday next week. And for Cal-X Sports, I'm David Cohen.
Thanks, David. That wraps up this edition of the KALX News. Special thanks to producer Rick, not too bad for a hangover, Parrot, engineer Scott, never touch the stuff, Brody, copywriters John McCorder and Phil Regan.
Tune in every weekday for KALX News at 8 a.m., noon, and 5:30. And don't forget, Dateline Berkeley makes its debut on Monday. I'm Peter Dudley.
And I'm Imran Gori.
Good night. Good night.